Welcome all you countdowners to episode 58 of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews Podcast. Today is Tuesday, the 10th of May, 2016. I'm one of your hosts and my name is Wayne.
And I am your other host. My name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast where we count down lists associated with movies and television shows so you don't have to make the tough choices about what to watch next. Wayne, what are we doing today?
Today we're reviewing the latest Idris Elba and Robb Stark thriller, or Richard Madden if you want to use his actual name.
No one knows that name.
Exactly, it's Robb Stark. Bastille Day is the name of this movie, with thanks to Adriana from Anarchy PR for inviting us along to an event screening.
Yes, thank you very much. The film opens here in Australia in the coming week. I think it's open around the rest of the world a little while ago, however, so we're not that advanced for our overseas listeners, but for you here in Australia, we'll be keeping things mostly spoiler-free,
That's right. You
can get along and enjoy the film if you choose to do so after listening to today's show. But you may notice something different already about the show. Hopefully you will. We have a whole new setup, a whole new sound system.
Very, very professional looking. Paul sprung for this huge King Dick mixer. We got like separate mics with pop filters. I have headphones on. There's headphones. And
do you know how budget you just made us the first 57 episodes, Seth?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I have to work on my mic technique now as well. Right. So if I bellow into the mic with a cackle, I'll try and turn my head a little bit.
Anyway, we hope you'll notice a difference in quality, but we will be ironing it out over the next couple of weeks, so please bear with us. That's all for the technical stuff. Today's countdown then, Wayne. What are we doing?
We are going to attach to this movie a countdown of our top odd couples in movies. Odd couples. That can mean a few different things.
I took it as like buddy films.
I sort of did too, but then I started thinking to myself, well, the worst odd couples or the best odd couples? How do I swing it? I'll let you know how we went when we get the countdown.
We might have some very different lists then because I went very literal with my use of that.
Okay, we'll see.
All right, well, that's pretty much it for the preamble before the show. Let's get right into this review of this new release, Bastille Day.
Bastille Day is a Parisian thriller about a reckless, insubordinate CIA agent, played by Idris Elba, first tracking and then teaming up with a light-fingered pickpocket, Robb Stark, as a terror-fueled unrest mounts in the run-up to France's 14th of July Bastille Day celebrations. This movie was actually filmed before the Charlie Hebdo attacks, so that's, you know, a little bit of coaching.
Okay.
Yeah, so they didn't know, but yeah, puts it a bit of a weird way. Tell us about the stats on this movie, Polly.
It's directed by James Watkins, a UK filmmaker who was responsible for a couple of pretty decent horror films, the Daniel Radcliffe starring Woman in Black, mm-hmm. and a much smaller budgeted little film called Eden Lake that gets a lot of good press amongst horror fans.
Mm.
So it's kind of strange to see him jumping over to do this. He's credited with the screenplay along with Andrew Baldwin, I assume no relation.
I wouldn't think.
There's no word at all on the budget for this film. It's actually only open, despite what I said earlier, in the UK a couple of weeks ago, where it hasn't done all that magnificently. It's only taken a little over 2 million US, and now it will be opening here in Australia. No word from what I can see on when it will open on US shores, so all the more reason to keep this pretty spoiler-free.
Yeah, totally.
All right, as Wayne's given us the script rundown already, why don't I throw to you? What were your initial and overall thoughts of Bastille Day?
Bastille Day. Well, I actually had not heard of this before we were invited along to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was personally very interested to see Robb Stark in another production. To see
Richard Madden is going to be on the phone.
He's pissed about this, man. No, but yeah, you know, because that's a draw, though. That was a good bit of casting because it made me a little more interested.
Mm-hmm.
I do like Idris Elba.
Mm-hmm. You know? Me too. I think he's got a lot of natural charisma, generally speaking.
Yes, this movie plays a little bit like a lower budge Jason Bourne movie.
Yeah,
to me. A lot of folks are talking about how this is like Idris Elba's kind of audition for James Bond. I don't see it that way.
I hope not for his sake.
No, this isn't a James Bondy character. It's a Jason Bourne-y character, in my opinion.
Uh-huh.
It is, you know, it's a thriller that's around Paris. It's a little hard to swallow at times, I think, or, you know, a lot.
Whatever do you mean?
Yes, and this movie does actually really lend a lot of power to the hashtags in upsetting a government. It is absolutely not that powerful. But as a rule, it's a little bit silly, really. But what I thought, I think I got out of it was that it didn't devolve into a London Has Fallen-esque kind of ridiculous kind of action movie.
Wait, have you
movie.
Seen London Has Fallen?
No, I haven't.
Back up the truck.
Really? I want to see the first one. Yeah, okay. Just that kind of thing. Because like the first Olympus Has Fallen.
Yeah, Olympus Has Fallen.
Okay, because that's just a piece of shit.
I disagree.
Yeah,
entirely.
It's a big piece of shit, and this isn't that. So that's something I can definitely say in its favor. How about you? What do you think?
Yeah, look, this film lives and dies by its chemistry between its two leads.
That it does, which is fine.
And I don't think it ever really came off the screen in a way that was engaging enough for me.
Really?
I don't think Idris Elba is all charm.
That's true.
Naturally,
he's all charm.
He's very much he's a big guy. Mm-hmm. He does seem like he would be a good action star heir apparent, especially in this time and place where we have people like Liam Neeson being made into.
That's right.
He could easily step up given his much more natural physical presence.
Yeah, he's got gravitas like that.
Yeah, and he's a good actor.
Yeah, and I do him. So he's an attractive man.
Whatever does it for you. Richard Madden, look, he plays the everyday kind of pickpocket fine and with a whatever backstory. My problem is when these two come together, I never ever bought them as this odd couple buddy.
Now, is the movie not sort of... But is that not the structure of their relationship? It does. You know, obviously they're on opposite sides to start yeah. with, and then they've got to try and somehow trust each other, and they need reasons to do that. That is all fine. If they do sort of work a bit more together towards the end of the movie, yeah. is it not that's how it was written, and you just didn't think it would rank?
Yeah, the idea was that it was meant to get to that. It was meant to get to the point where, you know, they start off on opposite sides, but they come together to unite against that common threat once they identify it's in both of their interests and the interests of Paris as a whole.
Yeah.
But they just kind
of... Never quite got there for you?
No. They just kind of completely and utterly unconvincing their back and forth. I could not see one reason that these two would have anything but contempt for each other. And by the end, you're meant to buy they kind of like each other. Nope. Not
yeah, one thing that I did notice, or I think I was thinking of, was towards the end when they really start sort of working together with this common goal thing. Rob Stark is very accommodating. Like, he's doing shit that he could just fuck off if he wanted to, but he doesn't. So, you know, there's that. I mean, I'm not sure what the release for this thing is. It seems to me almost like a straight-to-video. It's not.
No.
But it seems to me like it's on that level. Not to say it's horrible or anything.
There's only one reason this made the cinemas, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And why it's got a UK release, why it's going to be out here in Australia very shortly, and may or may not see light of day in the States, I don't know.
Yeah.
And that is Idris Elba.
Yeah.
You remove him here and put in another Rob Starkian type actor.
Yep.
Of that TIFF TV yeah. show ilk, and this goes nowhere.
Yeah. Look, he's so hot right now. Idris Elba, so that's why this gets released. Yeah. And that's not necessarily bad. I must admit, I saw it because it's Idris Elba as well. I like him. So I thought it was okay. I mean, look, there's some crunchy fights in there, and there's a lot of cool, there's a rooftop chase scene, which was...
Probably the highlight of the movie.
Yeah, probably cranks up the action a bit. It was a little bit exciting. It sort of does maybe, as a plot, require you to overlook the implausibility of certain aspects, but that's not the worst premise ever. I mean, I think do you think that the fact that there was those terrorist attacks in Paris, do you think that makes this more topical and
yes.
something? Yeah,
yes. That actually, now you put it that way, that might be the other reason why this got
yeah,
released.
Yeah, I think that's why it maybe got a bit of a wider release than ever. So I think that for me, emphasizing the pace and the thrills over coherence and consistency is what this movie does. It's actually well paced. It taps along pretty quickly.
Look, it's a short film. It's 92 minutes.
Yeah.
It does not outstay its welcome. I will agree with you there.
Yes. So,
but.
I know. It probably needs a little more substance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, while I would personally rather be excited but uninspired over bored but pensive, that's just me, though, because, like, you walk into this movie, you know what you're getting, right? It's an action movie, thriller thingy.
Action thriller, but I don't think the action's good enough for this kind of film.
That's fair to say. A
thriller to be effective to me needs to be...
Really thrilling.
Thrilling, and also have some of the, and look, this film is a, it does, we're not going to talk about what they are, but it does thrives on a couple of twists.
Yep.
One of which is so telegraphed and pathetic. I could not believe it actually did go that way.
Yep.
The other one is a more minor twist, but I liked that, how it all sort of played out in the end a lot more.
Okay.
I don't know. I just, everybody other than these two leads in this film is so interchangeable, and like, you could cast anybody in these roles. So the bad guy, the the female CIA operative who's running Idris Elba's character.
Kelly Riley?
Is that her name?
Yeah, right. I love her, by the way.
Yeah, you said that when we saw the trailer. Oh, I love her.
Yeah, so we did it. So that was
She was in Eden Lake. Maybe you should watch that film as well. So obviously has a bit of connection to James Watkins, the director.
Yeah.
There wasn't much about this film that really excited me. I sat there and I watched it. Probably didn't help, I should add, that I've had a bit of a back issue the last couple of weeks and sitting for 90 minutes at a time was painful by the end. So maybe that detracted
somewhat. No, that would have to have detracted. Let me ask you this. Despite, you know, back pain notwithstanding or whatever, were you ever bored in this movie?
I was nonplussed.
You were nonplussed, but would you sit there going, oh, this needs to go along. Like, I personally thought to myself, I wasn't ever going... Ah, shit, something needs to happen now. Right? Maybe it was getting there and then it stopped. So I think it was action-paced. So, I mean, I don't know. Like I always say, I just don't want to be bored.
Okay.
So yep, I was a little... I was okay with that. Look, this isn't anything we're going to rave about, I shouldn't think. I will hazard that guess. I think that it's a fairly by-the-numbers piece. I think Idris Elba's charm really does elevate it, though. Because you do sort of want, you're more interested as a result of him being in there, like you said.
Yep.
You swap him out, it's not the same movie. Fine, but it wasn't that movie. They used him. So it works for me. Do you have a star rating?
Yeah, I'm probably making it sound worse than it was. You hope for something big and kind of that grabs you and amazing, and this film is not that. If you went in with suitably, look, hey, you know, I've got an evening off or an afternoon off and I've got nothing better I really want to do. I might just catch a flick. You could do worse. But,
yeah, absolutely.
But at the same time, if you go in thinking, well, this is going to be the next Jason Bourne or the next action series and Idris Elba is now going to be the new action star, you are in for a massive
disappointment. No, this won't get you there. So how many stars?
Two stars.
2 out of 5 stars?
Yeah.
Shit, that's low, man.
Low?
I don't know.
I feel like I'm being a little generous.
You think it really? You think 2 out of 5? Oh, shit. Okay, well, my star rating was actually 3 out of 5 stars.
3 stars.
Yeah. Because, again, I'm not you. But also, it's more like glass half full kind of thing. Like, I have to not enjoy bits of it for long periods to bring the score down. Whereas I think with you, you need to be impressed more and more to bring the score up.
That might be a good way of putting it. That 2.5 stars, is it fair to say, is a pass then?
Yeah, it is, but it's real close.
So in other words, 3 stars is much better than a pass.
Well, it's not much better, it's just better than a pass.
Mm, okay. Well,
what is that, 60%?
Yes.
You get that in a test, you're like, I passed again.
Yeah. Whereas for me, fail 40%.
Yeah, because Paul's standards are actually very high.
All right, 2.5 stars then as a collective countdown rating. Get along and see it if it sounds like it's your bag. Just don't go in expecting all that much.
Yeah, fair to say.
All right, well, we've got time, I think, to jump into a short segment that we haven't done for a little while. Let's do a little bit of checking it out.
What's up, guys? This is Nick from the Epic Film Guys podcast, and you are listening to the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews with your hosts, Paul and Wayne. Every single week, they take the best in television and film and also the worst, and they'll let you know what's worth your time so that you don't have to waste your time. And every single episode, you're not only going to laugh your ass off, but you're also going to learn a hell of a lot about a lot of different movies and a lot about how much Wayne loves testicles. So join them each and every week. You can follow them over on Twitter at TheCountdownPC. Find them on iTunes, or of course, you can always go to their website, thecountdownmoviesandtv.podomatic.com. Enjoy the show.
Even when the composer wasn't that great, they were like no-namers, but they come up with these iconic themes, which
even films that are complete, even films that are complete shit fests, like
garbage.
Stallone's
yeah.
like Stallone's Judge Dredd, like that theme is so iconic it sticks
right
in your head.
Don't call that movie shit. We both know that's your favorite movie of all time. All right,
it definitely is one of them. I will readily admit to that.
A little bit. Let's put a little more lighthearted feel in this.
What are you doing down there, Judge Hershey?
Waiting for backup.
Hey, Diane Lane. Diane Lane, man.
Fucking check it out!
Check It Out, the segment where Wayne and I throw a bit of movie or film-related news at one another and then by proxy get you guys to listen along. Wayne, what have you got for us to check out today?
Couple little ones here for me. I want to know, what are your views of the Jack Ryan movies and characters, Paulie? You're a fan? You're not a fan? You don't give a shit? You don't give a shit?
Nope.
Really?
No, in fact, I would go so far as to say, don't care, have seen enough of it, stop trying.
Really?
Mm.
Because we have a new Jack Ryan.
Oh, for crying out loud, how many more people can have a shot at it?
Well, following in the footsteps of...
Lisa McCarthy?
That's Jane Rand. No, well, exactly, after Alec Baldwin, Harrison Ford, Ben Affleck, and Chris Pine, Amazon is commissioning its own TV show for the Jack Ryan character, and they have cast John Krasinski in the role. John Krasinski is Jim from The Office. The American version.
Yeah, I don't watch The Office. American
really?
Version, no.
Oh, this is not a good show. Mm. He's been in other movies and crap as well, but you know him. You know him. You know some of the guy. He's like, he's got the funny hair with the thing, and y'all out there know him. It's John Krasinski.
He's got the funny hair with the thing.
Yeah, yeah. I'll post a picture of him on the line.
Okay, do that.
To be honest with you, though, he's more of a cute fella rather than a, you know, rugged leading man. It's kind of an interesting point. I think he recently played a Navy SEAL or something, so maybe he's getting into the, he's strapping
getting
on a little bit of pants. Yeah.
He's
Chris Pratting it a little bit, possibly. Yeah, he must have beef up a little bit. But we'll see how this goes. It is an interesting move. I'll probably watch it. I'll probably give it a try.
Yeah, I'll let you watch it and report back. How's that sound?
I'll let you know. There you go.
One thing I think we will both be watching, and depending when they get off their asses and do this, is what was announced today.
What?
There's been a lot of clamoring amongst Marvel fans for a particular character to get her own film. It hasn't been put on any schedule, and it still hasn't. But Kevin Feige, is that how we say his name?
Yeah, Kevin Feige.
Today announced and committed to a solo Black Widow film.
Oh, what the fuck? I don't know about this shit, man.
Come on, she's great.
Ah, she's fine.
I like her character. I like Scarlett Johansson.
This is like giving Hawkeye his own show.
No, it's not. Because no one does give a fuck about Hawkeye.
No, no one does.
But everyone gives a fuck about Black Widow. Except you.
Okay. All right. Well, you know what? I mean, hell, why not? Just throw another one on the pile, Marvel. You know, you got like a whole lot going on. I suppose it's a female character. It could hit a new audience. All right. Okay. I'll give it a shot. But it ain't going to be no Captain America's, yo.
Apparently not your 5-star estimation.
Yes, let's just mention for a second that Nick blew his stack at me a little bit about giving Captain America Civil War 5 stars.
That's Nick from the Epic Film Guys.
Check
him out. Happy wedding over the weekend.
Yeah, he's all getting married and stuff.
We're recording around about the time when it will actually be happening for you, so all the best, sir.
Ooh.
But yes, no, he was not impressed at all.
No, he
with
wasn't.
Your 5-star. Not even impressed with my 4-star, to be honest.
I know! Bit of a tough one, but there you are.
All right, so there we go. Black Widow movie coming at some point.
Cool. And I just wanted to mention real quick, I know I've mentioned this slightly before, but Batman The Killing Joke is a wonderful graphic novel that is now being produced, and we just saw a trailer for it. You know, it's an animated feature.
R-rated, I believe.
R-rated, which is really, it's because this book is like probably the most chilling adult Batman book out there. Like, people get raped and it's not women and stuff. It's pretty nasty. It's like a real nasty book.
People and not women. Anyone gets raped, it's nasty.
I know. Sorry, yes, of course. But it's like, it's really not what you would expect from a comic. So it was written by Alan Moore of Watchmen fame. And illustrated by Brian Bolland. Absolutely beautiful. This trailer from the DC, I must say the animation looks a bit shit. So I hope they clean that up. It looks like jerky and stuff. They're trying to redo frames from the comic, but it can't help but look a bit shoddy compared to the beautiful illustrations in the book. If you ever do get a chance to page through this thing, it is beautiful to look at. So I'm interested about this. A lot of Batman geeks like me are as well.
Yeah, sure.
Like to see how it goes.
This sounds like it were your area of expertise. So
yeah, sadly.
In the future, top 10, last 10, or indeed review segment, you can let us know.
I mean, it's coming straight to video, so.
Yeah, okay. Before we go any further, we should throw out our thanks and appreciation to hashtag Pod and Family on Twitter, a group of independent podcasts that come together to promote one another. And this week we have a couple of very interesting promos for you for shows that, well, we like and you might like to check out.
All right, Geek Yoga Podcast. Yeah, I'm Wade.
We're doing a promo.
Oh, shit.
Hi, everybody. This is Knock.
I'm Wave. Rah-rah.
And listen to us on the Geek Yoga Podcast every Wednesday.
Yeah. Facebook?
Yes, you can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/geekyogurtpodcast and on Twitter at Yogurt Podcast.
Spaghetti!
Just Yogurt Podcast.
Yes, at Yogurt Podcast.
At Yogurt Podcast. Yay. I got nothing. I don't know what you want from me.
I wanted to cut a damn promo.
Well, fuck you then.
Hello, everyone. This is Jason from the Three Is Comedy Podcast, featuring myself and fellow podcast comedians Bob and Mindy. Our podcast is a variety comedy show featuring a wide range of segment topics aimed at turning everyday life into laughter. But we also happen to be pretty good rappers. Three Is Comedy, this ain't a spelling bee.
Three fine folks bringing laughter to the family.
Tell the kids to leave because we're dropping profanity.
Okay, so maybe we're not good rappers, but we do know how to bring the comedy. You can check us out on iTunes or Stitcher, or you can visit our website, 3iscomedy.podbean.com.
This week's countdown, we went away to talk about the best buddies in film. Well, at least that's what I went away to talk about because, well, Wayne might have discussed something slightly different.
Well, my call sheet, which we prepared together, Paulie, was about the odd movie couples or odd movie pairings.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the way I went with it, though there is definitely some buddy-esque elements to my list. The way that I went about this, because it's actually tough.
Yeah, there's a lot of couples in film.
There is. I wasn't sure how to construct it. Do I prioritize the oddest couples, or do I prioritize the most enjoyable, like, or the best odd couples?
Yep.
My list is a bit weird. It starts off with the most odd, in some cases offensive, couples, and then evolves into couples that I actually liked.
Okay.
So, you know, it's a little bit weird, but we'll see how it goes. Should be fun.
Mine is definitely not based in order of the best film. I went with the more iconic, memorable buddies, or, and look, some of them are odd couples, don't get me wrong, there's definitely a number of these hit that brief.
Okay.
Couple a little bit more traditional, although I would suggest that all of these at some point or another in the films that I'm going to talk about are a little antagonistic.
You could make the case.
Yeah,
that's fine.
So in the end, we're not going to be circling too many different waters, I don't think.
Let's see.
Well, all right then, well, why don't I go first?
Yeah,
this week my number 10 best buddy / odd couple comes from The Rock.
What?
Dr. Stanley Goodspeed John Mason, the only man to have escaped from Alcatraz, i.e. Sean Connery in that role and Nicolas Cage in the other role. These two are great.
No, I'll tell you why I'm laughing, right?
Okay.
Because, okay, so we recently, me and Bridget went to San Francisco recently.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said to her, oh, it'll be so cool. When we go to San Francisco, I'll play The Rock for you on my iPad. And you can check because it's set in San Francisco.
Yes.
And we went to the freaking Rock when we were there. So she's like, okay. And I said, no, listen, it'll be cool because it's, you know, it's shot around San Francisco. It'll get us in the mood for hanging
out.
The
ambiance.
There. Yes.
Yeah.
Second leg of the flight or whatever. I'm like, check it out. Here we go. We start watching, right? And she's just looking at it. And I haven't seen this thing since the 90s, all right? Yep. Well, I have maybe, whatever. I still love it. I love The Rock, all right?
I think it still holds up.
It sort of does, but then you, like, you know, Nicolas Cage is like...
Overacting?
Stanley Goodspeed, you know, this kind of thing. And she's just going, like, you can see her bristle at that. And then I think we never even got to the part where they even hit The Rock.
What?
Yeah, I was like... Okay, well, that's all the San Francisco stuff, because it's all, like, shot. And she goes, yeah, good, don't make me watch this.
Shit, all right. Well, in that case, I'm sending this one out to Bridget. Dr. Stanley Goodspeed and John Mason are a very unlikely couple who come together to save San Fran from terrorists led by Ed Harris. Well, domestic terrorists, I'm not sure that's the right word. Patriots, they call themselves.
Right.
And a great action buddy drama unfolds from there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a very memorable pairing, largely to... Well, mainly Nick Cage is overacting, but then also some of Sean Connery's very quotable lines. Winners!
Losers make excuses or something. Yeah. Winners go home and fuck
the prom queen.
Oh, shit, that's funny.
There we go. My number 10, The Rock.
Okay, nice one. See, now my number 10 is a couple that I found very offensive.
It was offensive.
Yeah. It was because this is an odd couple. It is musician Beverly Switzer, played by Leah Thompson, and Howard the fucking Duck. Do you remember this fucking show? She fucks the duck. Don't fuck the duck. Don't be dumb fucking ducks.
Oh, God.
I remember going, this is bullshit. Because even when I was a kid, I was like, this is just weird, man. Why would they write this into it? It's a kid's film as well.
In a PG film.
I know. And how are they supposed to explain that? How was anyone supposed to explain that to me?
Wow.
Yeah.
George Lucas has a lot more to answer for than just the prequels.
Oh, yeah. This was made, like, you know, I don't know. There was a lot of hubbub about this at the time. Yeah, I've always had a problem with it. This is not something you should write.
Kind of remember the things. Like,
If like the theme song was good, but you know, I actually heard a podcast recently. I can't remember which one, but they were reviewing that scene, and one of the podcasters said that he felt some movement when he saw that. He says he didn't want to admit it, but he got slightly aroused. I don't understand.
I'm glad you're specifying that.
Yeah, good, because I
are you gonna name the podcast?
I think it was the those British guys. I know that's something pod. No, not the something pod.
No,
because I would tell you that straight away.
Oh no, skip to the end.
Skip to the end. I think it was skip to the end. I'm pretty sure it was. Yeah.
Okay.
So there you go.
All right. Thanks for that. I think
no problem.
My number 9, just to write this listing ship, is a much more traditional buddy couple that I wouldn't. They are a little odd couple in a sense. We're going all the way back to John Favreau and Vince Vaughn in Swingers.
Okay, Swingers, good. Yeah. Because Maid, which is the other one they did together,
yeah,
was a bag of shit.
No, I can remember nothing about Maid.
Good, because it's shit.
This particular film. And so John Favreau is very wound up, tight, kind of wannabe actor. And Vince Vaughn, his best mate, who's all
happy-go-lucky.
Yeah, and easygoing with the ladies and telling him how to hook up with people, and him getting resentful and annoyed, but really just wanting his ex-girlfriend, or at least wanting to have a proper relationship. And so this
is a great movie. Yeah. Swingers was so good. We loved it. It was so, like, it was totally like us when we were kids. You know, you play video games and you go out to the club.
This place is dead anyway.
Yeah, play dead anywhere.
still gets used to the vernacular.
I still love it. And if you want, I don't know how well it holds. I haven't seen it in a long time, but.
But in 1996, when we were like 20 years old, give or take.
And I found that it was like a guy movie.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of girls, some girls, Bridget likes it, but like a lot of other girls, like, not really for me.
Yeah, fair enough.
Okay, my number 9 is along the same vein as my problem from Howard the Duck. It is, in fact...
More interracial fucking?
Well, not interracial, but
interracial is not the right word. Interspecies.
Interspecies, yeah. Because there's nothing wrong with interracial.
Yeah, good point.
This is Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher, Luke and Leia Skywalker.
In which film?
In probably the second one, because they make out, even though they're brother and sister.
I have actually blocked that out.
Yeah, you should, because it's fucked up. This, to me, is like, I reckon, I'm not sure, but I reckon George Lucas didn't think this through. Because he basically played
There's
the...
a lot of things George Lucas didn't fucking think through.
No, he didn't, but it was a weird like move to make. Like, he actually in the first movie, they're actually drawn together because they're the hero and the whatever, the princess. And then in the second movie, she makes out with him in front of Han Solo, and he's happy about it. This is not right. This is not right. As a man with two sisters, I can tell you this shit is disgusting, okay?
But he didn't know.
It doesn't matter. He should have known.
What? So the moment their lips locked, he should have just gone,
there should have been there should have been no chemistry whatsoever. It's like, it's like kissing my fucking sister.
Well, there clearly wasn't any enough chemistry because she ends up falling for Han.
She still didn't have to kiss her brother in the damn movie. I don't know. I remember thinking this couple afterwards I was just kind of repelled by the whole thing.
We're just totally going at this a different way.
I know. I'm like the most awkward couples. Exactly. No, it does actually flip around 5 to make it like couples that I'm fond of.
Okay. All right.
So like I told you, it's an unusual one. It's an unusual one.
Yeah.
But there's my number 9.
Okay. My number 8, probably the earliest film on my list, I think, is all the way back to 1992. And a basketball film starring Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson.
Yeah, White Man
Can't Jump.
We loved that movie, right?
Yeah, movie's great.
I mean, Paul's a basketballer himself.
Was,
you know, he was one of the basketball dudes in high school. They all, like, you know, thrown at lunch, like at a big fucking layup shot into the fucking bins. Shit like that, right?
Or, you know, just grabbed the basketball, went down the courts.
Oh, and you also play basketball as well, yeah. But no, it was a good movie. I mean, you know what? This is actually a pretty good pick from you.
Yeah, and again, they get antagonistic places during the film, but they end up becoming buddies and getting onside to go off and try and win this street ball championship.
Yeah, and I remember, like, even though they won at the end, spoilers.
Yeah, pretty sure. For 24-year-old film.
It's been a while. There actually was kind of a sad note to it. Unless you, like me, hate Rosie Perez and are quite happy that she fucking left Woody Harrelson at the end. If I was him, I'd be aiming for that. But that's what happened at the end. It was actually a better than average one of those movies.
Yeah, and it was those films that you watch once and you miss too many of the jokes because you're laughing at one, and it was so fast.
It was very fast-paced.
And very, very quotable.
Hmm.
I saw your mum walking down the road kicking a can. I said, "What you doing?" She said, "Moving."
Yeah. Well, just like your mum was an astronaut. We didn't even know what the fuck that meant.
That's right.
But it was funny.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
That's my number 8.
White Man Can't Jump. All right. My number 8 is Casino. 1995's Casino. And the odd couple here is Joe Pesci and Shazza Stone.
Hmm.
You know why?
No.
Because what the fuck? Joe Pesci was a weird little guy, and he was kind of a gangster, and then he ends up tapping ass to Sharon Stone.
She just uses him to climb the ladder, right?
Yeah, but this was a this offended me a lot. I'm like, this is gross. What this is like a weird old short dad trying to.
You took the okay. Even if we went with you took honest couple. Now I'm thinking in my head the most unmatchable. You're like, which one's boinked in the most weird way,
and hence are very odd in my opinion. Yeah, I know. The brief got a little mixed up on this one, folks. I'm sorry. But, yeah, I found their pork very unusual and awkward and off-putting. Hence an odd couple for me. One I was uncomfortable with.
Nothing to add. Nothing to add at all.
Oh, God. It doesn't really get good until another... Okay, yeah, no, that's good.
All right, great. My number seven. As far away from Sharon Stone, fucking Joe Pesci as possible. It's Sheriff Woody and Buzz Lightyear in the Toy Story series.
Yes, of course you would. And I agree.
They are started odds in the first film. They're fast friends by the end of that same film. They have their little tiffs along the way in number three, but they are totally and utterly have each other's backs and are great mates through, generally speaking, the last two of those films. And what a pairing.
Well, Tim Allen's
finest work, without doubt.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously, you know, it's fair to say probably Tom Hanks has done some better things than just voice Woody, but how iconic. And, of course, there is news down the pipeline that Toy Story 4 will be making its way to cinemas eventually.
Oh, my God, you're down for that.
I will totally be down. I won't even need to take my daughter if she's not interested.
Wow, I hope they don't crystal skull the shit out of it.
Every chance.
Yeah. All right, well, my number seven, dude, is a movie that I'm always cringing. You're going to cringe. It's a movie I've always liked. It's called In the Line of Fire from 1993. Now, we got your Clint Eastwood, you got your Rene Russo. Clint Eastwood is 300 to 400 years old. Rene Russo is, we dug her at the time. She would have been like 40s, something like that.
Yeah, she was a model turned actress.
Was she?
Yeah.
Oh, God, she's beautiful. Even now. She still gets some. So, she did Superman or something. Yeah, okay. So, I believe she was in Superman.
No,
she was like
Thor.
Yeah, someone's mom.
Yeah.
Yeah, in this movie, the presidential assassin played by John Malkovich is being protected by Clint Eastwood and Rene Russo, and yes, they get it on, and it's weird. And that's why it's number seven for me, because it's just a little weird. I promise it gets different after this.
Yeah, I mean, in Hollywood's great tradition where it seems to be okay
for older men to get with
much younger women. And yeah.
Again, I did like this movie, so
I liked it too.
Obviously on some level I was accepting it, but
Wolfgang
I remember...
Peterson film?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so, you know, but that's my number seven.
Okay.
In the Land of Fire.
My number six is a classic pairing, a classic buddy pairing, and it's the only tragedy is that one of these characters doesn't make it out of the film, and so we never saw anything more from them, despite the fact that Quentin Tarantino has alluded to bringing this character back for a long, long time. But it's not happening now because John Travolta, who plays Vincent Vega, and Samuel L. Jackson, who plays Jules Winfield, are probably well and truly past being able to play younger versions of themselves.
No shit.
And given that Vincent Vega dies in Pulp Fiction...
Everything's got to be a prequel.
Yeah, makes it pretty hard for that to happen.
Good pick. These guys are definitely a memorable couple.
Their dialogue, the back and forth. I mean, this is Tarantino... up there with amongst his best. I tend to like Reservoir Dogs better than the film, but yeah. I know I'm in the vast minority of opinions there.
No, a lot of people think that too.
But their scenes are priceless all the way through the film until Travolta's unfortunate demise.
Yeah, I mean, I never liked the character, so I was quite happy to see him by the farm, but this was where that whole hitmen talking shit to each other kind of thing started, and it's been copied many times since. Yeah,
iconic and utterly memorable. So my number six, Pulp Fiction.
All right. My number six is... Grumpy Old Men.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so now we're getting a little there. This is a 1993 movie, and I don't know whether it was because I was mentally old beyond my years as a child. Not smart beyond my years, not wise beyond my years, but kind of just old.
An old soul.
Old in my thinking, yes. But I found this odd couple extremely interesting and entertaining when I was a kid. It was sort of my introduction to old man humor, which I had never encountered at that stage, being, just out of high school. But I still like this and the sequel. I don't know why I like old guys shitting on each other and made it funny or whatever, but I mean...
It's Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau?
Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau. And a good portion of the comedy comes from Jack Lemmon's dad, who's like 100 years old. And he's saying shit
taking
like...
old one eye to the optometrist.
Yeah, exactly. Or making all those dick references. Yep. Or like, he's like, trying to crack onto an old woman saying, I've been to Hawaii. She's like, what island? He's like, thinking I want to lay her. Shit like that is good comedy. So, Grumpy Old Man, 1993... An odd couple favorite of mine.
I would like to introduce my number five in a unique way for the countdown. I would just like to play this short song.
fuck, fuck, fuck. Mother, mother, fuck, mother, mother, fuck, fuck. Mother, fuck, mother, fuck, noinch, noinch, noinch. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. Noinch, noinch, noinch. Smoking weed, doing coke, drinking beers, beers, beers. Rolling fatties, smoking blunts. Who smokes the blunts? Who smoke the blunts? Rolling blunts and smoking.
Let me get a nickel back.
$15, little man, put that shit in my hand. If that money doesn't show, then you owe me, oh.
I am, of course, talking about Jay and Silent Bob from the View Askew Universe, as created by Kevin Smith. You can take your pick of films because they're in virtually all of his films. In this particular case, that bit of music comes from Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, which happens to be one of my favorite.
Probably the best
comedies.
One featuring them too.
Yeah, and it's all in jokes. And if you're not into the movies, then this is the worst film ever made. But if you were, like I was, and it sounds like to a lesser extent, perhaps Wayne, you were too.
Highly enjoyable.
Then this is a great, great film. And these two are very funny. Although Jason Mewes does wear on you pretty thin. That's why this film is the better of the lot, because he's not just standing there being a prick to Silent Bob. They're actually doing something, and they've got a thematic or a narrative arc that they've got a journey on.
Kevin Smith's work is like really, it's odd to me because I don't like everything he does, but I like him immensely. Mm. And this is probably one of the best of his. I think like Chasing Amy possibly slightly more. But this...
What did you say?
Chasing Amy.
I thought you said Tasting Amy.
I might have fucked it up and said Chasing Amy. this is a good pick. I like this one.
Thank you.
Not bad at all. All right. Now, my top five seems to be much the same in terms of it's like a 80s and 90s fest.
Okay. There's been no good odd couples in your definition in latter cinema.
It has. I don't know. It's these are the ones I tend to have, like, I'm more fond of. My number five is from a movie called See No Evil, Hear No Evil in 1989. It's Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder.
Yep.
And they're playing, perhaps predictably, but then again, it was the 90s. One guy's.
Was it the 90s or late 80s?
No, it was early 90s. You're right. Late 80s, 1989. Uh-huh. And one guy's deaf, one guy's blind. One guy's white, one guy's black. You can see where this is going. in my head, it's one of the funniest movies I'd seen, because I saw it as a kid, you know, and that kind of thing. And also, I fell in love with Joan Severance.
Yeah, I have to say, the bad woman in this film is pretty hot.
She's beautiful.
Yep.
Holy shit. Like I said, it sounds formulaic and dumb, but, you know.
In 1989,
that's
exactly par for the course. Yeah, that's not a bad pick at all. I did briefly consider
really?
It.
Really? Yeah, surprised.
For my list. Instead, my number four is a much more contemporary film from 9 years ago now. Jeez, that's making me feel old. Mm. It's from one of our favorite filmmakers, at least in the vast majority of his films.
Go on.
Edgar Wright.
Mm-hmm.
It's Nicholas Angel and PC Danny Butterworth from
Hot Fuzz. Good, I'm glad you went with this one. Yeah,
played by Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, who did in all the Cornetto trilogy of films, played a couple of characters alongside one another.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, to my mind, the funniest and best connection between them. Because the whole thing is about, it's a piss take of buddy cop films.
Yes.
And yet, in so the film progressing, they become what they
very
are.
Very meta.
Lampooning. It's very sort of meta.
Look, Hot Fuzz is one of the best comedies. Honestly, it's one of the best comedies. It's so rewatchable. And fuck, the Point Break jokes alone.
Every joke in this film is set up early and then pays off at some way or another.
Yep.
And there are so many of them that I've probably seen this film four times now.
Mm-hmm.
And I still catch something new every time I go through. Yeah, it's an incredible movie and a great pairing where Simon Pegg is playing this very straight down the line super cop who gets his man every time, and Nick Frost is playing the overweight fat country bumpkin of a cop who just wants to be friends.
Yeah.
And yet they rub off on each other, and unlike something like Bastille Day, by the end I totally bought that they were friends.
Okay, no, that's a good pick. That's a good pick. My number four is from 1987, and it's a movie called Dragnet.
Oh.
Yeah, I wondered how you feel about this. Now, the two in question, Tom Hanks
and
Dan Aykroyd. Look, this is a nostalgia call. There's no two ways about it, okay? From that point of view, this is one of my favorite buddy cop films of my childhood. You got the straight-laced Joe Friday played by Dan Aykroyd, then you got this hot-head sort of root rat dude like Pep Strebeck played by Hanks, well before his, serious cinema days. But the real awesomeness here is the comedy itself, and I think I actually liked everything that happened in the movie so much, that's why they're one of my favorite couples.
Okay.
So, you know.
Yeah, nice.
That's old school.
Again, I think there's a lot of love for this, for their pairing. Whether or not people like the film, they kind of like this dichotomy between these two characters.
Yeah.
It's almost odd seeing Hanks being the root rat, as you
described. I know. It is like, you think about it now, you're like, what the hell? But, totally.
My number three is a classic. It's also nostalgia-based, and we certainly have spoken about it on the show before.
Mm-hmm.
It can also be introduced by a bit of music.
God, let's go.
Of course, Wayne's World. Mike Myers and Dana Carvey playing Wayne Campbell and Garth Alger.
Yeah, this movie followed me around, of course, being a guy named Wayne.
Yeah.
So Wayne's World, people still do it now because they're assholes. So.
And have long memories.
Yes, but this is an iconic movie.
Yeah, and even they have their antagonistic moment where they break up and aren't going to do their cable access show anymore. And they are clearly an odd couple insofar as at least, well, Dana Carvey's character, Garth, is completely and utterly incapable of doing anything himself.
Yes.
And attaches himself like a parasite to Wayne and follows him around, does whatever he wants, until he doesn't anymore, and hence their schism.
Yes. No. It's a good show.
All right, thank you. That's my number three.
All right, my number three is a total buddy cop movie, but it doesn't start that way, of course. It is 1987's Red Heat.
What?
I know! I always liked this movie!
Really?
Yes, a lot of you apparently don't think it's that great.
I just think it's like one of the least memorable Schwarzenegger films.
Wow, to me,
pre-1994.
To me, it's like one of his movies. It's Arnold Schwarzenegger and James Belushi.
Yeah.
Arnie is like a Russian policeman who has to follow some suspect into Chicago, where, of course, is the jurisdiction of James Belushi, who's a Chicago cop. And mayhem ensues.
Okay.
But I always liked the little thing, and even stupid stuff. Like, just, I don't know, like, they take off and he spills coffee on his James Blue. She's like, "Are you hardboiled, my nuts?" Shit like that. All that was very funny for me back in the day. It was the 80s.
I do have a question for you.
Go on.
Do you like James Belushi?
Yeah, I do. Well, look, for me, James Belushi is taking care of business. He's this movie. He's, what's he done? He's done a couple other things.
He's done that pretty shitty sitcom. I can't remember what it's called.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, According to Jim or some shit. Yeah, yep. Fuck that. I've never seen that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I like him. I like him fine.
Okay.
I like him fine.
Because there are a lot of rumors about this guy being an absolute prick.
Really?
Yeah, like one of the most unlikable.
I would not have picked that.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was coming from. Because he does seem to play this eminently likable
sort of rogue.
And that if it wasn't for the fact that, you know, his brother was John Belushi, he would never have gotten anywhere.
Really? That is a surprise.
Anyway, that's the rumor mill, but it's kind of like that line out of Scream. There's only so many times you can hear about Richard Gere having that gerbil up his ass before you start to believe it.
Well, as a man who's tried to dribble in his ass, it is very uncomfortable and you typically just don't do it.
All right, we're getting down to the business end here, and we have not had one single cross-up, which is, given that we come at this in completely different ways, not at all
not
surprising.
No.
My number two is a film that we very recently rewinded, be-kinded, watched.
Oh, really?
Tango and Cash.
Tango and Cash, dude. I thought about this.
Yeah.
You're right, I bumped it out a little bit, but Tango and Cash. Of course.
I liked it, you liked it, Ali was on that show, he didn't like it so much, and that's why he's not been back on the show. Sylvester Stallone and Kurt Russell playing opposite ends of the spectrum cops who dislike each other's success and have nothing but jealousy for each other and trying to one-up each other through the whole film until they eventually combine forces to defeat the evil Jack Palance and his minions.
And his rats in a fucking cage in his office.
In one of the most stupid scenes ever, but still hilarious.
Of course hilarious.
There's my number two, buddy. And they are an odd couple as well.
Big time. Who besides Ali don't like them?
Yeah.
Shit. Yeah. All right, that's a good one. Well, my number two, I have switched around a little bit. It is the movie Spies Like Us. Remember this one?
Jeez, you got a lot of Dan Aykroyd love.
That was a Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd movie. Back in the 80s.
85?
85, I believe, yep. Yes. And it was, again, a nostalgic call for me. But those guys were really... You watch that again, and I have, sort of in the last 5 years. The chemistry, the interplay, them bouncing off each other works really well. I know it's the 80s.
And you have to refresh my memory because I can't remember it well enough.
Mm.
They're an odd couple because?
Well, what happens is they get thrown together because one cheats on an exam for the public something service and another guy. And they basically get picked by the Pentagon. Because they're two dickheads to actually be decoys and go to Pakistan and be the fake spies that are actually attracting all the attention.
Yeah,
there's two real spies that actually do all the good shit.
Yeah.
And they don't know it until it's way too late. But all of the stupid slapstick crap that's in there is funny each time. So, yeah, if this thing comes on TV, give it another 20 minutes.
I remember being fond of it back then.
Yeah.
Not seen it in a long, long time.
Mm-hmm,
okay.
Old fave.
Well, here it is then, number one. And if you think buddies, and if you think odd couples, if you're being true, then this should be your number one as well.
Okay, it's probably not.
But clearly, given where you fucking left field is way right of where you are.
A little. A lot.
My number one is a whole series of films. It has two of the most iconic and memorable characters ever thrown together. It is an action film. They are cops. It's Martin Riggs.
Of course it is.
Yes.
Of course it
and
is.
And Sergeant Roger Murtagh, Mel Gibson, and Danny Glover from the Lethal Weapon series.
Look, if this was a buddy cop countdown, then I'm sure that would have hit me.
Yep.
Please go on.
Well, we didn't specify it couldn't be cops. So.
No, we didn't. You're right. You're right.
So, look, he's the slightly insane hothead who's impulsive and quick to act and is going to get everybody killed. And when I say he, that's Mel Gibson's character. And Danny Glover, or Murtagh, is the over-the-hill, ready-to-retire, just-want-to-take-things-easy guy.
Do all for this shit.
I'm going to do all for this shit, that's right. And then they have to come together to defeat any and all number of different evil bad guys and terrorists and all the like. And I still would say one of the only sequels that surpasses the original is Lethal Weapon 2, which is one of my favorite action films from that era.
Yeah.
Okay, 3 and 4 kind of lose their way a little bit, but still. An enjoyable series.
No, two was great.
One that I really, really like.
We were big fans of Patsy Kensit, as I recall, at the time.
Back in 1989.
Yeah, that shit was off the chain.
Yep.
All right, nice one. Look, I can't fault that at all. I mean, this is definitely a great example of that.
Okay, so what did you go with instead of Lethal Weapon?
I'm genuinely interested to see what you think about my number one.
Okay.
My number one is a movie from 1996 called Fled.
Oh, come on.
Oh, how could you not like this? I'm talking about Stephen Baldwin and Larry Fishburne, and they're playing convicts who escape. You must have liked this movie. We liked this movie, I'm sure about it.
I didn't mind the movie back in 1996, but it's certainly...
It's stupid, come on, convicts.
I would argue Howard the Duck and Leah Thompson is a better pick than that.
Oh, kiss a ball. Man, no way. This was totally an odd couple movie, man. And I'm surprised, motherfucker. I'm surprised. This movie seemed to me to be like a retelling or a reimagining of The Defiant Ones with Tony Curtis and Sidney Poitier. I don't think it actually is, but it involves...
You make it sound like I should have seen The Defiant Ones with Tony Curtis and Sidney Poitier.
It's an old movie where they were handcuffed together because they were convicts and stuff like that. Right. That's what happens in this movie. But I remember everything about this movie, man. I remember him going to the titty bar and like he gives a rose to a chick and then it turns out to be his girlfriend and then... Salma Hayek's in it. You like your Salma Hayek.
I did like Salma Hayek.
And then him saying stupid shit like, come on, convict, we got a fled. Dumb shit
that's
like
all
that.
I remember is dropping in fled in the past tense, using it in present tense as often as possible. It's like every third line was, you know what we should do? We should fled, right? Yeah, we should fled.
Which makes no fucking sense. Exactly, yeah, we got a fled. No, it's not English.
That's the best thing about the movie.
Yeah, I liked everything about this movie. I liked all the stupid action. This is a quintessential bullshit 90s movie.
Mm.
And to me, that's where my head sits when it comes to buddy or odd couple type movies. This is like, to me, a quintessential example of that.
Mm.
Not to you, clearly.
No.
So, you know, that's it. Fled.
Did you have any honorary mentions then?
I did. I had Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Yeah, okay, so that's
Steve John Martin,
Candy.
John Candy.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good one.
I had...
Way better as your number one.
Yeah, I wanted to put like a Die Hard with a Vengeance in there, but then I realized that that doesn't even hit my list. Sam Jackson and Bruce Willis. So no, that's my other thing. I mean, I was going to put Twins, like Danny DeVito, and I didn't.
Yeah, okay. But it's still all been mentioned as odd couples and buddy films.
Yeah, it's the brief.
I just had two. I had from the recent 21 Jump Street series, Jonah Hill and Channing Tatum.
Oh, shit, I forgot about that. Those are good guys. Yeah.
And from Django Unchained, Jamie Foxx's character, Django, and Christoph Waltz's character. They're pretty odd couple-y.
Christoph Waltz is the best thing about that movie, man, that character.
His character was great. The whole film. I really like that movie.
No, the movie's good.
It's
movie's great.
I think I did rate it higher than Hateful Eight. I enjoyed that.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
All right.
Very nice, man.
A couple of little bits of feedback from Twitter just to wrap up this countdown.
Bring it on.
I did put it as one of the best buddy films, so we didn't get a lot of Howard the Duck or Leah Thompson action. From the Craft podcast, which is @craft_podcast, they said Pineapple Express. Rogan and Franco's bromance will always have a special place in our hearts.
Agree. Excellent. Yeah. Excellent show.
And then from the Crossover podcast, @mpierce6 asked, does Finding Nemo count?
Nemo's dad and Dory?
Yeah, well, that's certainly an odd couple. That would fit your brief than mine. And then we had a little bit of back and forth earlier today, and they also said, well, on that basis, pretty much every Pixar film would count.
Because there's always some sort of pairing.
Yeah, and he did guess that, or they did guess that Toy Story might be on a list, but they also suggested maybe Up.
I haven't seen Up. Have you seen Up?
Yes.
Is it awesome?
I didn't like it as much as a lot of other Pixar films.
Inspiring? Is it anything?
It's quite sad to start with, to be
honest.
Yeah,
I heard that's what it's about, right? Okay.
It's about loss and dealing and grieving with loss and, I mean, a kid's version thereof, but still, yeah.
Yeah, it probably made me sad. Oh, well, what are you going to do?
Oh, all right. There is our countdown of, depending who you listened to closer, best buddy films or the best odd couples.
Yes, as it says on my fucking sheet. So
there might be a picture that goes up on the social media to back up one statement. I don't doubt. Maybe I dropped the ball for a change a little bit.
For a change. Fuck you.
Okay. Well, before we go any further, we should consider, how can people get in contact with us, Wayne?
Yeah, why don't you look at us on Facebook by searching for The Countdown Movie and TV Reviews there. Or if you want to send us an email, hit us up at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
We will reply to all those emails or feature them on the show, whichever is more appropriate. You can also get us on Twitter, as discussed, @thecountdownpc. We're pretty active on there. All our shows are hosted on Podomatic, where you can like us there or like individual episodes, which helps us in terms of their ranking system. But most importantly, a rating on iTunes is what helps us out the most. We climbed all the way, Wayne, I haven't even told you this yet, to 129th in the film and TV podcast world on Australian iTunes this week.
I'm sure that's more impressive than it sounds.
Yeah. Well, given that there's well over a couple of thousand of shows.
Okay. No, so that's not so bad. That's not so bad.
We're getting up there.
All right.
And it's all based on a mixture of downloads and plays and ratings. So,
thank you very much, Countdowners. That is all to do with you.
Yeah, thank you to all the Countdowners who've taken the time to put that rating in there and even add a review. They're all appreciated so, so much.
That's going to do it for us this week, folks. Tune in next week, where we will be counting down the top 10 gaping plot holes in movies. Big, huge, massive plot holes, which we couldn't ignore. And we'll also rewind Be Kind, the movie Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Yes, we've talked a lot about Edgar Wright
the shit out of that movie
last couple of weeks, so it'd be great to revisit that film I haven't seen in a few years.
Yeah.
And then the week after, we're going to be doing a double up review. We're going to be reviewing Bad Neighbors 2 and X-Men Apocalypse. And based off that film, we're going to count down the best 10 action scenes in cinema history.
So that's going to be fun.
It'll be a huge show, and that's our next fortnight for The Countdown. Thank you, Countdowners, for joining us. It's been a pleasure as always. Wayne, have a good week.
You too, my man. Thank you very much for listening in, folks. Till next week, my name is Wayne.
My name is Paul.
Talk to you soon.
Cheers. Trying to make a living, needs the dough, but where you gonna go? White man, black man, white man, black man gets a check and some dough, so he said, here's to school, they shoot hoop for loop. Go to play, but don't go to stay. No matter what you do, they're gonna treat you like a chump, cause white man just can't jump.
Check It Out is the segment where Paulie and I check out shit to do with movies and other shit like that, TV even, you know.
One of the two.
Yeah, it's very complex, but Jack Ryan is now making its move to the small screen. Amazon is commissioning a TV show, which is Jack Ryan-ish. Oh. Fuck! Sisters cunt!
Just do that last bit again.
Sorry.